Today on The Grave Talks, we continue our conversation about hauntings, ghosts, shadow people, and more with author Jason Offutt. If you haven't listened to part one of our conversation, please make sure you do. Today we're going to talk about shadow people and Jim the Wonder Dog. You think your dog might be great. Wait till you hear this story. I'm Carol Hughes, and on this episode, part two of our conversation with Jason Offutt. Another book that you wrote is What Lurks Beyond the Paranormal in Your Own Backyard. I love the approach that you took to that book. You took where you lived and you went 100-mile radius of your house and checked into different occurrences that supposedly happened between ghosts and aliens and different paranormal events.
Right. And I got the idea of the book because at the time I was writing a newspaper column called From the Shadows, which was, I wrote about paranormal things. And I started to notice, wow, a lot of these stories I'm gathering and people are contacting me about are close to home. I wonder how many I could find. And I found enough to fill a book. Famous UFO encounters. I got time travel, demon possession, ghosts, Bigfoot, and a mind-reading dog.
I cannot let you say mind-reading dog without asking you about that. I swear I had a dog that could read my mind. Like, he just knew. Like, he'd look at me and he knew what I wanted.
I don't doubt that a bit. I think this has nothing to do with dogs, but it has to do with mind reading, because my wife has the ability to ask me to do something right seconds before I'm getting ready to do it. So I think she can read minds. Anyway, but yeah, the mind reading dog. Well, it's funny I mentioned my wife because it's in her home, happened in her hometown of Marshall, Missouri. I put this in the epilogue because I cheated by a couple of miles. It's just right outside the 100-mile radius, but it was too good of a story to pass up. Back in the 1930s, Jim Van Arsdale. No, it wasn't Jim. Jim was the dog. Van Arsdale. I'm trying to think of his first name. Anyway, but his last name was Van Arsdale. He owned the Ruff, R-U-F-F, which I think is funny, hotel in Marshall, Missouri. He was an avid bird hunter, and a friend of his from Louisiana gave him a present of a hunting dog. And it was kind of a joke. It was a Llewellyn setter, which are good hunting dogs, but this was the runt of the litter. That was the joke part. But what the dog turned out to be was the best bird dog, at least in the state. It was featured in a couple of magazines about what a great bird dog it was. Then it was Sam Van Arsdale, the owner. Sam started noticing he would say things in front of the dog, and Jim the Wonder Dog would go do what he said. And eventually it got to be people would gather in the hotel lobby, you know, have drinks, play cards, do whatever they were doing on a Saturday morning or whenever, Saturday afternoon. And Jim would say, show this to people, go find the guy from St. Louis. And Jim would go sniff around and then stop at somebody, and that he would be from St. Louis. He would say to Jim to prove a point, go pick out the license plate from Kansas. And he would go out in the park, go outside and pick out a license plate from Kansas. He got to the point to where he started writing things.
The dog?
Commands.
Oh,
no.
The guy. I was like, the dog started writing.
Sam would write. Well, he might as well have been writing. Right. If he had a thumb, he probably could. But Sam would write commands, hold it in front of Jim, and Jim would go do what he asked. People who knew Spanish and German and Latin would write out commands in Spanish, German, and Latin. Jim would still be able to follow the commands. I interviewed a woman who was very elderly when I talked with her, but she was a 10-year-old girl back in the 30s. They would go to the hotel, and she remembered Sam Van Arsdale telling him, go find the girl in the red dress. And he went to this group of young girls, and Jim kind of looked around and then turned around and looked back at Sam because there were three girls in a red dress. And he said, okay, the girl with the polka dots and the purse. And he picked this girl out. Jim, and this girl was kind of scared when Jim was sniffing around her purse because her dad had given her 10 dimes and she thought she was going to lose her money for some reason. But anyway, he was able to do that. He predicted, was able to predict Kentucky Derby winners. He was able to predict a couple of presidential elections, and people would bring a pregnant woman and ask what the sex of the baby was going to be. And 90% of the time, Jim was right. There were so many newspaper and magazine articles written about Jim the Wonder Dog that Hollywood studios approached Sam Van Arsdale to buy the dog. And they, you know, offered a stupid amount of money, but I guess Sam was a decent guy because he didn't want to sell his dog.
Couldn't do that. You couldn't sell your dog.
I don't blame the people from Hollywood. I mean, if you were going to have a movie about a dog and he could read the script, I mean, that would be perfect, right?
Do you think those stories were true or maybe embellished a little bit, but based on truth?
I think a lot of them were true because there's a lot of record. And then again, I interviewed somebody who was actually there and saw the dog working and, doing the things. In the Marshall Cemetery, there's a stone for him, a tombstone, and people leave coins on it. And there's also a park with a statue in the city of Marshall about honoring Jim.
Oh, I have to go there. I have to, just to pay my respects to Jim the Wonder Dog. That's a great story.
Yeah.
You know,
that's why I had to include it. Yeah.
We have another podcast called Real Ghost Stories Online where we take people's calls about ghost stories. They write in and we read the stories. Constantly, we're getting stories about shadow people. And it's something I've kind of wanted to look into for a while. What is a shadow person? Is it different than a ghost? And what makes it different than a ghost? And you wrote a book. So you literally wrote the book, Darkness Walks, The Shadow People Among Us. I wanted to talk to you about that and what your thoughts are on shadow people and what you came across in your research for this book.
I was hoping we'd talk about this, and I intentionally left out my encounter, which got me interested in shadow people to begin with, was in that farmhouse. And since we live 6 miles out in the country, you don't have to worry about people peeping in your windows. So we never had our blinds drawn. I remember laying down one night, I just shut the light off. The moon was out, so my room was just a uniform shade of gray. I could see everything. All of a sudden, I hadn't gone to sleep. I had just laid down, and in a corner of the room, this wall grew really dark, and all of a sudden, a man stepped out of it. And, scared the hell out of me. But he just walked by my bed. He looked two-dimensional. I saw no features whatsoever. It was like just like a cutout of a man, and it was in completely black. He just walked by my bed in kind of a badly drawn 70s cartoon type of way. And then for the next few months, I would see these things come out of the wall, walk by my bed and into the hallway. And eventually they just stopped. But I talked to people about it, not my family, but I talked to some friends at school and they thought I was nuts. So I didn't talk to anybody anymore. But then in the 90s, I was listening to Art Bell and he started talking about shadow people. And I'm like, I saw those. in my From the Shadows column, I wrote about my experience. And then I started getting experience after experience after experience emailed to me from people. And I'm like, there's enough interest out there for a book. So I started making phone calls and talking to people about their experience. And I interviewed Catholic Archbishop, an expert in Islam, an expert in Hopi mythology, a Cherokee shaman, an expert in Judaism. I talked to as many different religions as I could find. And I talked to some physicists on campus who are interested in ghosts about the behavior of shadow people, because shadow people behave like ghosts sometimes, but not others, and how this would be, scientifically. So what I came to the conclusion of is that shadow people are like divergent evolution. It's, you can have a canine species and a feline species that live in exactly the same environment on opposite sides of the planet, and they evolve to look and behave exactly the same. Okay, that's what I think shadow beings are, because some of them act like residual ghosts. Because there were plenty of people who saw shadow people, and they every once in a while would just walk down the steps, take a right into the kitchen, and then disappear. And that's all they would ever do. Other ones would seem to be like they were going to point from point A to point B, and they like my encounter, they were going through my room. They didn't take any notice of me whatsoever. They just were going from point A to point B, and my room was in the middle. You know, that I'm of course have no basis whatsoever on this, just my opinion. It kind of looked to me that maybe there's sometimes a narrow spot between dimensions, and those were actually people, but all I could see of them was their shadow. There are demonic type entities called demons in Christianity, the jinn in Islam, because I mean they behave the same way, and they are threatening, and they're threatening to humans, and they will feed off of people, like feed off the energy of people. There are some people have seen who are wearing a hat. That's nicknamed the Hat Man. And a lot of them just seem to be observing. This one case, I was talking with a guy, he was 18 at the time. He was home on a Saturday afternoon watching TV, and he felt he was being stared at. And he turned around and looked, and the archway that headed to the kitchen, there was a shadow being in broad daylight standing in the archway. And it noticed that this young man had seen him, and the body language showed surprise and shock, and it took off running. He heard a crash, and he rushed into the kitchen, and there was a sliding glass door that had two panes of glass on it. And the first pane was busted, and the second pane was not. But he saw the shadow person run along the back deck and jump off the back. Most of the shadow people encounters are not malevolent. They're pretty benign. But the ones that are malevolent, it's like they install fear. They instill fear in people and then feed off of that fear. There have been some bad cases. There was a case out of Australia. I talked with this woman who was sexually assaulted by a shadow being. It wasn't until her roommate groaned in her sleep that she was able to snap out of her shock and scream at the thing, and it disappeared. Some people have reported handprints on them, like they've been slapped by a shadow being, and they actually have the bruise from that. But mostly, again, most of the time, they're pretty benign.
The only time I ever saw one, it was like, I always say he, because it was tall. It seemed like a man to me, like the size of a man, but it just walked right past me. It was the weirdest thing. I was like, what the hell? I'm at home by myself and somebody just walked by the bathroom, and never saw it again. That was it. Yeah. So maybe sometimes there's a dimension that's being crossed. And the story you just shared with the 18-year-old who saw it and seemed to have startled it, like, is there some kind of dimension that we're crossing where we don't normally see them, and they're around all the time, maybe?
Well, I think so. There have been a lot of people involved in the paranormal who believe that. John Keel, the famous paranormal journalist who wrote the Mothman Chronicles, the book, he covered the whole Point Pleasant incident. He wrote that there are window areas in certain places, and they're narrow. They're more accessible at different times, and that we can cross over, and then things from that side cross over to here. And I think that very well could be a possibility.
You interviewed a lot of people for that book.
Probably about 250, I think.
Ooh, that took some time. And did you find most of the people were kind of non-malevolent shadow people? Because now you've given me something to be afraid of. Yeah. Sexually assaulted by one.
Just that? Yeah, I don't know. Well, yeah, mostly they're benign. And something I think I need to stress is that it wasn't just here. I interviewed people from across the U.S., of course, but from Canada, Brazil, Portugal, South Africa, Australia, the United Arab Emirates, and they've all reported basically the same type of being. Now, what it is I don't know. I think it could be ghosts and, you know, a dimensional shadow and demonic entities. I've interviewed a few people who are positive they are extraterrestrials.
You matter just gave fact, me something new to think about. I never thought about that.
I was actually on an episode of Ancient Aliens last year talking about shadow people and the possibility that they're extraterrestrials.
Which now that kind of freaks me out a little bit thinking about that.
Yeah.
Because that's given me something else to think about. That's interesting because I'd never really thought of that because in my head, I think of them as being a ghost. I never really thought about any kind of alien being.
There are also reports of them using the doorknob to open a door, you know, and doing physical things such as that. I did talk with two people who had shadow people encounters, but they were, one of the things they were convinced about the whole alien thing was because they said, and both they were, one was from the US, the other was from Canada, and they both said it looked like a robe opened for just a second and I saw something I shouldn't have, and it was green scales.
In your research for that book, you talked to people around the world. So in other countries, other religions, they're experiencing similar things.
And the only positive is I spoke to a Hindu scholar who said that would be in the various types of Hinduism, which I don't know how many there are, but there are a lot. That would be a soul going to the other side, awaiting reincarnation. But in every other religion, it's, you know, a demon or a jinn. The a Cherokee shaman I talked with said that it is a medicine man who has started using his powers for bad and has turned into something less than human. They're also the Hopis are one of the peoples who have this in their belief system that shadow beings are omens of death. And I have interviewed some people who that's what happened. I had a woman I worked with, such a sweet lady. She knew I was so interested in the paranormal. She said, "Jason, I've been seeing these black human figures out of the corner of my eye." And I'm like, "Oh crap, Bonnie. Okay. Tell me about it." And they seemed pretty harmless. Her kids thought she was just, you know, something's wrong with your eyes. But then she started seeing it more and more out of the periphery and in straight into her vision until she could see it straight in front of her. And then she found out her husband had stage 4 esophageal cancer. And when he passed on, she never saw a shadow being again.
Now you've given me another thing to think about.
Well, if you don't sleep tonight, I've done my job.
I think you have.
Yeah.
I'll have to like watch some old episodes of I Love Lucy or something to get all this out of my brain.
I got the idea for the book because I kept getting so many people contacting me with their story. I'm like, I was not alone. When I was a kid, tons of people. And as a matter of fact, I interviewed a guy who was young in the 40s and he had a shadow person encounter. So it's nothing modern. It's just something we're talking about more.
And I do think a forum like this, people listening right now can relate to it. I think a lot of times you tell certain people and they look at you like you're crazy. And I interviewed a woman one day who said, "It's not that I believe in the paranormal. I experienced it." So it's not just a belief. It's an actual something that happened to you. You know, when people say they don't believe in it, it's because they've never experienced it.
That's exactly what I tell people. I don't believe in the paranormal. And I say, that's just because you haven't experienced anything yet.
And then once you do, what is the explanation for that? And then you tell somebody and they look at you like, well, obviously you're mentally ill. That's the explanation for it.
But they don't do that as much as they used to.
Correct.
And it's because of shows like this and ghost adventures and other things on TV that people are have felt more confident in not being ridiculed when they tell their story. Back when I was writing Haunted Missouri, my first paranormal book, I don't have very much at all from Southern Missouri, and especially nothing from Southeast Missouri, because nobody there wanted to talk to me because they're like, nope, my place isn't haunted.
Because if you don't talk about it, it's not happening.
Right.
This was a great conversation.
Hey, I've really had a lot of fun and appreciate you having me on.
It was great. Now, you've got a website, jasonoffutt.com, and that is Offutt spelled O-F-F-U-T-T.
Yep.
.com, and you can check out all your books there. There's humorous books too. You've got the one about how to kill a monster using household items. I'm going to order that.
Yeah, if you're sitting in your living room and you have a cyborg from the future there to kill you, you'll know, you know, what's within arm's reach to protect yourself.
I think that's really good information. Everybody needs a copy of that right there handy at all times.
Well, and I will just give a free tip to everybody.
Please.
Make sure you have a cat.
Oh, I have two. So that's good.
I have two. Okay. Because we have one. His name's Gary. Gary is a werewolf distraction device. So if a werewolf ever breaks into the house, I'm just going to throw the cat at him, and that'll give me enough time, you know, to get something silver or at least get in the car. I'm like, Gary, I'm not giving you a credit in this book.
Well, it's been a great conversation today, Jason. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Well, and again, thanks for having me on, and hope we can do this again sometime.
I would love that. And if you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advanced episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts and you can try it. 3 days free. Go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. Find everything there as well, all ad free. For all of us at The Grave Talks, I'm Carol Hughes, and thank you for listening.